This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here today with Orly Gan from Checkpoint.
Hi. In my current incarnation at Checkpoint, I'm leading the product management and product marketing for all of Checkpoint threat prevention product. I've actually been in this industry for more than two decades now, so I have a broad history of what security for IT system actually means.
Yesterday on stage, you were talking about the belief that some people have that AI is going to be a silver bullet for this industry, and it really isn't. Can you expand a bit on that?
When we say that it isn't, we mean that with today's technology, we can see how much it still isn't. And that doesn't mean that in a few decades it won't actually become that. But with what we know today, with what we are capable of today, with the tools that we have at our hands today, we can see the deficiencies and the inherent flaws of these algorithms. That doesn't mean that they're useless. They're far from it. They're actually extremely helpful in solving certain problems that it would take human beings much longer to solve, dealing with a much larger scale. But if you want to trust the system completely, blindly follow every decision that it makes, AI are not quite there yet. They're not accurate as we would like them to be. And the reason for that is primarily access to data. In order for an AI system to be effective, it needs to be fed by a lot of data. And it's not just any data, it needs to be data that covers the entire scope and versatility of the space that it's trying to solve. And this is true for any field of AI and also true for cybersecurity. But it's very difficult for the cyber industry to gain access to the kind of data that is needed, because you absolutely need to have the data that describes what is normal. And how do you describe what is normal in a network? It's very difficult because things are very erratic and things change continuously. And last year's normal is not this year's normal. Just like last year's malware is not this year's malware.
How much is that view distorted for people? They look at some of the AI systems from IBM and other people where they've dealt with medical, and they've used large corpuses of scientific data. That, of course, gives them an ability to make predictive analytics through the AI. Cybersecurity, of course, is about things that change all the time. There is no large corpus necessarily to draw on, and much of the data happens to us day by day. Do we need to reset people's expectation?
We need to be more minded to the specific challenges that are different in different industries. If you look at the medical area, there aren't that many changes. The diseases that we would suffer from a decade ago, two decades ago, 100 years ago are still primarily the same diseases. What changed is the longevity of our expectancy of our lifespan, and therefore we reach maybe diseases that in the past people didn't used to get to that age where they would start having them, or at least not as much. And maybe there are some changes in the climate and in the environment that also manifest new types, not new types of disease, but change the probability of a certain disease. But those are very slow changes. They don't change from day to day. And cybersecurity is anything but that. The cybersecurity, I can't even make assumptions based on last month's attacks that would be relevant for this month. It's that dynamic. It's that erratic. So that's a much bigger challenge for this type of industry.
How do we get data that we can use?
First of all, you need access not just to malicious data, but actually to benign data as well. And that's the challenge, because malicious data actually does exist. There is access to it in many forms, and it's easier. And if you're a large vendor, your customers are happy to share with you what everybody assumes to be malicious. They're not happy to share with you what they think is benign. And certainly they would require a level of anonymization on top of that data that for many purposes would render it completely useless for the machines to actually start learning from. So that's where the challenge comes from. You can get access if you have access to the networks, but data networks is just a subset of your infrastructure, and a small one is growing smaller and smaller, right? We're moving to the cloud, and we have the data centers that have all of their internal communication that's also extremely valuable, and you have the endpoints and you have the mobile devices. So IT is diversifying, and therefore the sources that we need to grab data from are also diversifying and growing dramatically.
That seems to argue for a two-stage solution. At one point, there's an engine built perhaps by a vendor that understands bad stuff. But then as part of the installation, there has to be a learning process where the engine goes out and understands what is normal and what is good per customer, which then would make it difficult perhaps to create a commoditized solution.
This sounds great as a concept. It actually does work. I'm not trying to say that it doesn't work completely. It does work to a certain extent. But if you only learn what's normal in your environment, you're lacking a broader context, because then an attack that's coming in, if it's smart enough, will know to assimilate normal in your network. Often you need to have the broadness of knowing what's normal in the general world and also what's normal in the specific world that you're living in. And you need a mixture of these types of knowledge and the ability to learn both of those. This is part of why I'm saying that our technologies today, not just because access to data is a key part of that, but also because the mathematics is only capable of learning what it knows to learn, and it cannot really teach itself how to learn the new things fast enough. It doesn't adapt as quickly as we would like it to. It does adapt because you get a feedback loop. So every time you find something malicious, you validate 2 days later that it's actually malicious and you feed it back and the system becomes smarter. But it's not getting smart enough on its own. You have to still teach it and you have to feed it and you have to massage it. It's like really fine-tuning and delicate tweaking of the algorithm and always trying to figure out which parameters are relevant, which parameters are not relevant. And that's the art and skill that needs to go into AI systems today, which is why we say that they're not the magic bullet, the silver magic bullet. They will be. They're tremendously helpful, but they're not quite there yet as a standalone magical system that you will give it data and it will just tell you, oh, this is good, this is bad. We wish that it was, but it's not. Not yet.
If I look at some other vendors who are talking about AI and cybersecurity, they have access to cloud platforms, and they seem to be doing their understanding of what is normal by dealing with customers on the cloud platform and trying to take the data in a pseudo-anonymized fashion across large numbers of customers based on the platform. Do you see that as being where, if we want to be successful with AI, we need to go, or is there another step we need to take to get there?
That's one of the steps that we need to take. And of course, moving to the cloud makes it easier in the sense that there is access to the data, whereas where it was scattered in different organizations, you wouldn't even have an opportunity to see it. So now you have an opportunity to see it, but you're still bound by all sorts of regulations and laws and all of those things that are great for what they were put in place for, because we do want to keep people's privacy, but then we have to understand that at the other end of it, we lose our ability to learn from the past and apply it towards a better future. So that's a balance. And that's a balance, again, by the way, for AI systems, not just in cybersecurity. We see it in other areas as well, where people are very minded for their privacy and they don't want to share their data. And for very good reasons, because if somebody was trying to look for them, they could find information that they may not want to share with other people. And the anonymization often kills the ability to truly learn what's good and what's bad.
How do we get regulators to come into this? Because part of the inhibitor of sharing data is privacy rules. Regulators have become a little more relaxed in things like threat intelligence and threat sharing. We've seen that in the financial industry, where they now allow multiple banks to actually exchange data that 5 years ago would have been anathema to a regulator. Is there a process where regulators can begin to assist in making it possible to take the larger sets of data?
In general, I don't know if there is a process necessarily, but just in general, I would like to think that if we can demonstrate the value of sharing this data, then we can talk everyone into agreeing that this is in everybody's greater good. I think this will happen for the medical community for sure, because everybody wants to live longer. And if we can assure that by sharing data and anonymizing it to a certain degree, but not to the full extent, and we can benefit from it as humanity, we will probably see that. In cybersecurity, there's a good chance that there will be some relaxation of how we can use the data. Already there is within vendors, because a customer can sign off and say, yes, I trust this vendor completely. And we need to do some more things as a community and share data across all of us. And that would help us get to the next phase. I think a lot of it has to do with how big the threat is. And the threat is huge in 2018, and the threat is going to be even bigger in 2019 and 2020. And moving forward, we will just see more and more and more of that in places that become more and more critical to our daily lives. So today, you see an Equifax suffering, and you see WannaCry shutting down, I don't know, Telefonica and a German railroad service. But a person on his own is not necessarily quite as affected. And when you see power grids shut down, when you see things that are part of our daily lives being affected by cybercrime, people will change their mind. So this is a process we need to take as humanity, if you will. That's a broad statement to say.
Is there a lesson we can take from the bad actors? We know, for example, that bad actors took to the cloud very quickly. They discovered that the compute power enabled them to do some very advanced analytics when they were working through massive data dumps. there's been continual chatter for the last 10 to 12 months that some of them now are looking at some of the cloud-based AIs and trying to take advantage of those or seeing how they could use them. They, of course, don't have any restrictions on privacy. They don't care about what might be in the data set. They have a whole different view on what it can expose to improve their attacks. Are we at risk, if we don't solve this, of falling further and further behind the bad people?
Just like any technology that's being introduced, we often see it. We see time and time again through history of cybersecurity, and it's not that long. Certainly, we have a few decades now to learn from. Technology are put together very, very quickly in order to generate the value for which they were created. And very often, if not almost always, they kind of forget to build the security into it. And then they try to put it as an afterthought. And that becomes ever more difficult to do. Whereas if you thought about it from the get-go, you would have had a lot more success and you wouldn't have suffered from so many pitfalls that we see with so many fields of technology. And AI, when it's not used necessarily for cybersecurity, but rather used for other purposes, is going to be the target of the next wave of cyber attacks. That may not happen next year. Maybe this will happen a few years from now. But when we start using AI to make critical decisions for us on a daily basis, and somebody can figure out a way to make money out of changing the logic of how these systems operate, and there's a lot of money to be made because it's used everywhere, and certainly in the financial sector, we see it everywhere. If I can hack the system so that my car insurance premium becomes half of what my neighbor's is, I'm going to do it. It's only logical that somebody will try to attack those algorithms, and it's only logical that given enough time, they will figure out a way. AI is still very much at its infancy, and there is still an opportunity for all of us to kind of rise up and figure out, okay, we have to protect these. We have to have the right kind of measurements that validate and revalidate that nobody's tweaking with these algorithms. And it doesn't mean that that will make it bulletproof, but it will make it a lot harder for somebody to actually manipulate it over time.
You mentioned yesterday one of the difficulties with AI is it doesn't explain its decisions. It's a case of, well, I say this and you should accept it. And we have to take leaps of faith at the moment. If we're now moving to an age where the AI itself gets attacked, we can no longer take that leap of faith. So are we seeing parallel research into systems that effectively become the watchers of the AI, built out of greater AIs?
We're much behind on that. We're nowhere near that age. We will get there. I think right now we're still at the age where we're building the AI and we're being super excited about our accomplishments and our ability to solve problems that, like I said yesterday, for decades, those problems were researched by the top researchers in the world, in the academia, and only in the last few years we've actually managed to find those breakthroughs and be able to accomplish that. My iPhone now is capable of facial recognition. This is unheard of. Just 5 years ago, that would have seemed like science fiction. For us to create those systems that protect decision making, I don't think we're quite there. Maybe the right answer should be to somehow build a logic into those AI systems that would help them explain themselves better. A human brain is capable of explaining the logic that led to a certain decision. Perhaps if we give it enough thought, if we think that it's valuable enough and we shouldn't just trust those systems blindly, but rather request those systems to give us some insight into how they reach a certain decision, maybe we can work that out. So there are different paths to take here. But yes, it is true that if you're asking a system to use its full power of dealing with a massive scale that our own human brains was incapable of, then we shouldn't be surprised that the explanation that it may give us is also something that our brains is unable to comprehend. Whether we trust it or not then becomes a matter of a judgment and a matter of how accurate those systems are. And over time, they will become more accurate. And then we'll deal with other risks. Because if you get something from a system that's 100%, not 100, 99.999%, accurate, and you get a verdict that says you're very likely to catch a certain illness, do you trust it or not? Do you think there'll be a miracle? You're very likely to trust it at that point, and then the false positives become something that you need to deal with on a more human level. We'll see where this thing goes. I think asking those systems to give us an explanation that we can comprehend is not far-fetched. It's something that we should be requesting.
I've written about AI and expert systems since the mid-1980s. And one of the challenges has been moving from that science fiction view to the academic view, and from there now into the first stages of production. And as you said on the stage, part of that has been about the underlying technology catching up. We have quantum computing on the verge of emerging at the moment with all the work that's going on. Do you think that will enable us to speed up and make these systems be capable of actually working in real time, let alone just off of large corpi of data?
There's no doubt about it. Storage, compute, networking, all of those are progressing at a tremendous pace. There is no doubt that these systems will become so much faster and more efficient that what we see today will seem ridiculous to all of us just a few years from now, within our lifespan. There is no doubt. Technology is moving at a pace that is really hard to keep up with. And for all of us, we look back just a few years ago and we're like, wow. That was so naive, and we thought that was so advanced, and look at where we are today. It's not like a mind-blowing projection to say that in 10 years we will be in a completely new place that we may or may not be able to predict today. But certainly speed and capacity are going to continue to grow. We're not at the end of that road.
Looking forward, what do you see happening with AI over the next 5 years or 10 years?
First of all, we'll see it applied in so many more places. Places that are right now still in the research phase, and we'll see it being applied in more places than it is today. That is for sure. And in certain places, I think where the penalty for not getting it right will be limited, that's where we'll see more and more products being produced. And that's what we've seen so far. So I think we'll be seeing an expansion of that. The accuracy is also likely to become much better over time because we're perfecting those systems. Will we see a major breakthrough, a groundbreaking breakthrough that allows those systems, again, to auto-tune and auto-learn, which are the key elements that we need in order to get to that next phase of a general-purpose engine? I don't know. That's not for me to say.
Ollie, thank you for your time today.